The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
with Chill Insurance, proud sponsors of Cork GAA for all your car insurance needs.
Good evening, folks. It's been an incredible day.
But the one and only Eamon Ryan. Somebody said that this man was a lucky man. But this man is what makes Cork ladies football, and that's what's bringing back this Brendan Martin tonight.
One of the great comebacks. Cork are crowned All-Ireland champions for a ninth time in 10 years. Absolutely incredible stuff. Also tonight, Europe retaining the Ryder Cup.
Well, it's a great sense of pride, as I say, this ugly face, how happy it is. And the pride that we give to everybody, and the happiness that people in the stands, and that's what you do. I'm giving it for everybody else, it's not for me.
And the McGregor train keeps on rolling.
I said I was going to put him away in one round. No one's ever knocked him out. No one has ever done that to Dustin before. He's a great guy. I have nothing but respect for him. I don't just knock them out. I also pick the round.
He certainly does. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Rory and Lisa here with you until 7 p.m. this evening. What an amazing day it has been. Cork are the All-Ireland champions. They were 10 points down against Dublin with 16 minutes to play. The Rebels came back and got the win, their ninth Brendan Martin Cup in 10 years. This Cork team, Lisa, does not know what the word quit means. It is not in their vocab.
Right up until the very, very end, I thought that they might have been running out of time. 16 minutes left, 10 points. But you just knew all the time that they had the goal-scoring opportunities in them and they kept tacking on the points. It was brilliant.
It was absolutely incredible. It's one of the great comebacks I've seen. It was just gutsy. It was hard-fought. And it was experience shone through in the end for Cork as well,
yeah.
And they thoroughly deserve it.
They have leaders across the pitch. We talked about them a lot in the lead up to this match, how they have so much experience, so much All-Ireland winning experience. They're ninth today for eight of those players, and you know, I suppose it's written in the stars and you've got that much that much won, but it's as I'm sure we'll talk about to come in the show, you know, they've done this before. It's not the first time they've made a comeback, but today was sweet. It was so sweet.
It was very sweet. And to discuss it in detail, we're going to go live to Croke Park, where Mary White of Cork's Evening Echo joins us on the line from headquarters. Mary, I am running out of superlatives for this Cork team.
I'm telling you now, lads, my hands are actually literally shaking. I've just come out of the press room and Valerie Mulcahy is giving an interview to TG Carr Asquilga, and she is literally stuck for words. She's speechless, as is everyone here and every Cork fan. I mean, what can you say? That's, you know, it's their fourth All-Ireland title that they've won by a point. And it's, I suppose it's history repeating itself in the fact that in 2009, Dublin were again ahead, and with 2 minutes to go, Cork clung on to possession. And when you look back at the 2006 All-Ireland final, which they beat Armagh by a point, who was it who popped up with the final winning point? Geraldine O'Flynn. I mean, you couldn't write this stuff. I think they had 18 wides. And when you know, I suppose the fact that they lost such an influential player in Juliet Murphy in midfield, and people, and even myself included, you know, I was probably a bit worried that if things weren't working out, that they probably didn't have such a player who could, you know, dictate things and pull the strings and pull everybody in together and keep the heads cool. But they did that, and they had, you know, they had the likes of Bridge Corkley, I mean, fielding a ball out of nowhere in the last few minutes. Deirdre Riley making vital interception. You know, they've answered everybody's critics. And, you know, to think that this is their ninth All-Ireland title in 10 years, I mean, what can you say? I don't know what to say, really.
Wait, Mary, I know, it's ridiculous. With 16 minutes left to play, Cork were 10 points down. It was looking fairly ominous for the Rebels. What changed the game?
I suppose, obviously, the subs changed it. I mean, Ronan Ivukula apparently was hopping off the ground in training, and I absolutely delighted that she came in and got a vital goal. That probably gave them the lift that they needed, definitely gave them the lift that they needed. You've Emer Scally, another superb player. She's still minor next year. She's come on in the last 10 minutes in a number of games, barred the All-Ireland semi-final, got a cracker of a goal as well. I suppose they just probably went, you know what, lads, we have to go for this. They were probably maybe slightly afraid of Dublin. I don't know if they were, but they were letting Dublin run at them. But I think when Mona's goal went in, they went, you know what, lads, it's now or never, basically. And I think that's probably, the subs probably changed, and it was them actually getting a grip on the game and getting a grip on themselves, to be honest, and finishing. As I said earlier, they had 18 wides, you know, which is probably the most they've ever tallied in Croke Park.
But if the bench made such an impact, the squad mentality that seems to be there is so strong, Mary, and the philosophy is very simple: work hard and you'll achieve. And speaking to Eamon Ryan before the match, that was the essence with him, with this group of players, and it proved it today.
Definitely. I think there's 15 players that were on the panel in 2009 when they beat Dublin, and I think there's 9 players still remaining from the panel that won in 2005. But when you look at the younger players who've come in, you know, I was talking to Nola Cleary there last week, and she was mentioning about Roisin Phelan, you know, literally coming in in her first year, the youngest player in the squad, 19 or 20, coming in, you're slotting in next to the likes of Angela Walsh, you know, Breach Corkery, Geraldine O'Flynner next to you, Breach Dacker next to you. You know, I'm sure she was here at All-Irelands and Crow Park years ago when they were winning their second and the third All-Irelands. But as Nolik said, it's the work ethic that they have. They've come in with it. They haven't bought into it. They've come into it because they've learned and they've seen from the likes of Valerie, Juliet, Elaine Hart, all those people down through the years. They've seen that they've worked so hard. And I think the thing that people admire so much about this Cork team is that despite the success that they have, they are so nice. They are just so down to earth. And that stems probably a bit from Eamon Ryan as well and his ethos, you know. And they're so humble, and he's so humble. And I suppose you can't forget their families as well have kept them so grounded. And even their opponents admire them because of that.
Absolutely, but it's special mention that they deserve today. You've mentioned the fact that they have 9 titles now, 8 players in this squad with 9 titles. On top of that, you've 3 players who've done the double this year, and to see Breed and Rena at the top of that roll of honour with how much they've achieved, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable, yeah. Breed and Rena actually collected their 14th All-Ireland medal today. Angela Walsh collected her 12th. And Rena and Breed are one shy of 15 All-Ireland medals, which is the most ever, which is held by a Dublin lady called Kathleen Mills. She won 15 All-Ireland medals. And to think that Breed and Rena are only, 27, 28, and the fact that they, you know, they can still go on. I think Mary O'Connor was maybe 34, 35 when she retired. So they could still possibly win more. But I suppose I'm delighted for Breed Corkery because of the fact, one, she's a Jew player, and she's done a number of doubles. I think this might be her third one. But Mary O'Connor has lifted the Brendan Martin Cup as a dual player. Angela Walsh has lifted him as a dual player. Rena has lifted him as a dual player, but Breach Corkery hasn't. And she's the fourth and final dual player. And I'm delighted that honour goes to her, to be honest.
And Mary, just looking at the bigger picture slightly, this game was a cracking advertisement for ladies football, and the fact that there was 27,000 people in Crow Park today suggests that the game is in very good shape here.
Definitely. I think that it's the most ever that was in for an All-Ireland final in Crow Park ladies. It's a pity that I think, you know, a number of weeks ago there was only 12,500 or so at the Camogie. The game is in absolutely fantastic shape. I mean, you had New York and Westford in the junior final. That was a cracking game. Obviously, in the second game in the intermediate final down, you know, they hammered Fermanagh more or less. But there's such a variety in the teams, you know, that are there that I think it ignites the interest a lot more, probably more so than in Camogie. Now, I'm not overly au fait with Camogie, but I think maybe it's the way they market the games as well. I think ladies football tend to market the skill of the game, whereas looking at the Camogie campaigns, it's more about the image of the females in the game, whereas in ladies football, it tends to be always the skill. And I think that aspect is what really deep down, you know, grabs people's attention.
I think credit where it's due to TG Cahir covering matches throughout the championship too has raised the profile in a massive way over the last couple of years.
Oh, massive, yeah. It's fantastic. You know, some people probably make the case that, oh, you know, it's on telly, I'm not going to go to the game. But, you know, when you see games like that on the telly, you know, you only but want to go to a game. And I suppose you have to mention the fact as well that the Irish Women's rugby team were honoured here by Ladies Gaelic at half time for their achievements at the World Cup and obviously beating New Zealand. And TG Cahir again had the cop on to go and say, you know what, we're heading to France, we're covering this. And definitely, you know, TG Cahir do deserve massive credit when it comes to the promotion of not only just ladies football, but women's sports in general in Ireland.
Mary, do you know anything of a homecoming at this point? Any details?
I don't, but normally, but the girls will be destroying the Red Cow tonight, I would think. That's where the banquet, they'll have their own banquet there tonight, and they get a bus home. So normally it's about 8 o'clock on the South Mall, but I stand corrected again on that. But I'm sure they'll inform people tomorrow morning as to what will happen. They'll go to, I think it's Crumlin's Children's Hospital in the morning with Brendan Martin Cup, and they love that, and then it'll be... and head home then tomorrow evening, I would think, to the South Mall around 8 o'clock.
Great stuff, and I'm sure no more than the Camogie a couple of weeks ago, we'll get a great crowd down there to see them back. Mary, thank you so much for your analysis. Enjoy the celebrations in Croke Park.
Thank you, bye-bye.
That's Mary White there of the Evening Echo, joining us live from Croke Park to discuss a fantastic win for Cork today against Dublin. It was looking bleak with 16 minutes to go. Cork were 10 points down, and to be honest, I kind of said that's exactly the noise I made.
Yeah, I made a lot of embarrassing noises in terms of yelping, and I poor Rory Horgan in the background today got a scale for one time when I was like, don't be saying that, I want to enjoy it. I have to say, Rory, we have to spare a thought for Dublin this evening, because but that is just like, we were here talking about what a phenomenal win it was for Cork, because they closed it out with so much style and never panicked, and you know you joke, oh no, we don't spare a thought for them, but that was unbelievable to see what Cork did to them. Like, I have to spare a thought for Dublin, because Cork were so phenomenal. That's a horrible loss for them to bear.
It's a bottle job of Shelburne like proportions.
Just brilliant stuff, and we talked about it there at the end of Mary. I'm looking forward to another homecoming tomorrow evening.
Certainly, actually, not to call it a bottle job takes credit away from Cork, and no credit should be taken from that team and that comeback. They deserve all the plaudits and superlatives and credit that's coming their
way.
They
do, yeah,
absolutely
exactly
incredible. Yeah, the homecoming tomorrow night should be around 8 o'clock-ish down in the South Mall, similar to the Camogie homecoming. We'll have details on that in the morning on our Red FM News and Sport. We'll get you up to date on that. But it'd be great to see a great turnout in the South Mall to welcome the Rebels home, because they certainly deserve it after the year they've had and basically the final today.
Yeah, a lot made of a hurler who captured 10 All-Irelands yesterday. When you think of how many players in this squad now who have 9 and 12 and 14 medals, they deserve every single, as you said, plaudit that they get, every single clap on the back they get. I'd say they will be in Cork till all hours tomorrow night, meeting all the fans and everything. They deserve every single second of it. Breed made a lovely speech, you know, as she accepted the Brendan Martin Cup this evening, and paid so much credit to Eamon Ryan. I said it on the show last night, he's an absolute character, loved talking football to him, and I look forward to meeting him tomorrow night and shaking his hand, because he's just a brilliant man, and what he's achieved with them is phenomenal. And him and his entire backroom team, because he had Shane Renane in there for his first year this year as well, which I'm sure added a new dimension to his backroom team and the entire effort put in. So fair play to all of them.
Yeah, and an incredibly gracious and humble man as well as Eamon, and he deserves a lot of credit as well. Hopefully we'll get him on the line before the end of the programme. Right, in the Senior Hurling Championship as well, a cracker between Douglas and Glen Rovers. It'll have to go to a replay after they finished level at 116 apiece. We'll have reaction from that game a little bit later on. They were looking to book their place in the final against Sarsfields, who claimed their place with an 118 to 14 points win over Napiershick. Mark Dynan was at the game for Red FM Sport today down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and reaction from the first game, Mark spoke with Sars boss Pat Ryan.
I'm delighted with it, you know, and it's great for the club again, you know, and keeps things going. It's just a huge level of consistency, like 6 finals in 7 years. It's a great credit to the young fellas, you know, great credit to the players, you know, because there's an awful lot of the fellas now to play senior hurling, and with dedication and giving up stuff and staying a bit like a hermit at times, you know, and our fellas have done that for the last 7 years, so we're thrilled with them, you know.
And to stay focused, coming back year after year after year.
Yeah, but you look, our fellas are very ambitious, you know, and they want to be successful, and they have huge hunger, like, and, you know, when Pierce just came back at us today, you know, and brought it back to a point, you know, a team that doesn't have that hunger would die a small bit, and the team that are hungrier would win it. But they look, I'll be honest, fellas have an insatiable appetite for success and for winning county titles, and look, we're in the final now, and that'll take care of itself. That'll be a 50-50 game wherever we're playing, and we'll prepare for that as we can.
It was a really close game today, and Pierce kept plugging away at your lead.
Did it? Yeah. Look, we started very well, and we held the lead for a good bit of it, you know, and we had 6 or 7 points up at times, you know, but we left them back into it. Good play by them, maybe a bit of a lax play by us, but you know, we were managed to get a couple of scores in the second half, and that made a difference.
How were you able to pull away there at the end? Was it experience?
I think it's experience. experience, but also to look to good hurlers. Good hurlers get scores, and good hurlers win frees, and hooking and blocking out on our defence was excellent today. Willie Carney and Conor Sullivan and Craig in the full back line. So we were really tight today, you know, and I was delighted with them.
What's the most pleasing aspect of the performance today?
I suppose the win, really. Do you know, like, when you come down to, into semi-finals, it's all about winning, and look, we won, and we'll analyse where we went wrong and things we did right, and see what we can do for the next day, you know. But look, they saw great pride in the jersey, which is the key every time they go out and play.
And this seems to be fierce competition for places as well. Guys will be pushing now to start the county final.
Yeah, there's very good competition for places, you know. It's very hard to get on, you know. And look, to sometimes like we thought about making a couple of extra substitutions today, but you know, if a couple of fellas got a score or won a free or did something right, and like it's very hard to come on at times in games like that, especially a game as physical as that. And when Pearson had the kind of bit of momentum, you know, it's very hard to come on and turn it, you know. But look, our fellas tried very hard, and look, we're delighted with them, you know.
And the build up to the county final now, something you're very used to.
Yeah, but look, that brings its own nervousness, and it's great for the club. It'll be great excitement there, you know, because look, we might be used to it the last kind of 7 or 8 years, like, but before that we hadn't been in county finals. We hadn't won one since 57. So look, we're delighted with the way it's going at the moment, and we just have to make hay while the sun shines, as they say.
And will that be an advantage for you? You've been there so many times.
Yeah, I suppose. Look, you will know what to expect, and we know what we're doing, and we know our fellas can do it. You know, we know our fellas can deliver and can play in the day, and that's that expectation. When you haven't been in the county final in a while, or you've never been in the county final before, you don't know how fellas will react. You know, so look, we know our fellas will come that day and give a performance, and if it's good enough, fair enough, and if it's not good enough, fair enough as well. You know,
injury wise, any worries ahead of the county final?
I think Robert just given by the hurt himself there now. You know, so. He might have broke a finger, so we're not too sure about him. So he'll get extra there tomorrow now. Gary Kelly Lynch will definitely be out. Michael is getting his cast off tomorrow, but he's a broken thumb. But he'll be able to play some part, hopefully, in the final, you know.
That's Sarsfield's boss Pat Ryan there after their win today over in the Pearshig, 118-14. Sars booking their place in the Senior Hurling Championship final. They will have to wait for Glen Rovers and Douglas to play out a replay. They finished 116 apiece there in the second match in Parkick. We're going to hear from Sarsfield's Kian McCarthy.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Especially after last year with Middleton Bates, like, all we wanted to do was get back into it. Like, and we struggled through at the start. Douglas beating us in a tough one against Carrigdon, but I think we have to find our feet now at the right time.
And a really tough, close game today against the Pearshig.
Ah, yeah, sure. I mean, Pearshig's always give it hard. Like, they beat us in the league final last year, and like, we knew coming into it that they're going to be tough and dogged, and they always bring a good brand of hurling, and it's always hard to beat them.
And describe the goal to us, Keane, after 9 minutes.
Looked a bit of luck too. I mean, the ball was just hit into the square, and I didn't know that anyone get a touch on it, like, but it eventually went in. But you need luck in a day like today anyway, you know.
And that put you 6 points up at that stage, but the Pearshig pegged you back 4 points. You were 4 points up at half time. What was the feeling like at the break?
Well, we kind of said, look, we were 4 points up against the Bears as well last time, and we kind of knew we were in a good enough position to kick on, like, but we were always fearful of what Pearshig would bring. Like, in fairness, they never throw in the towel, and it's always hard to get one up on them. Like, so we just tried to grind out a result in the end, and we finally did.
Was it your experience you're able to push on there in the closing stages?
I suppose you could say that, like, but I mean, Pearshig have players there, they've just as much experience, if not more, than a lot of our players, you know. So I mean, we just, as a team, we kind of stick together usually when things go wrong, and in fairness, we can always kind of grind out a result, like, and we're happy enough now that we did again.
And the build up to the county final is something you're very used to. It's your sixth final in 7 years.
Look, it's great. No, it's great for the club, and I mean, like, the Miners are after winning the Minor County not so long ago. Even the Camogies in the club are after getting up senior. They won the county yesterday, and look, it's down to us now to bring a third trophy into the club again, and hopefully we kick on and do it.
After losing the final last year, how big an incentive is it to bounce back this year?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, losing the final is always hard. Like, and people always say we've the monkey on our back now. We kind of go every second year, like, and it's our every second year now again this year. So hopefully we can win it and try to push on again next year, and maybe do a bit more in Munster, because we haven't really got good in that in the last few years. So hopefully, you know.
And Keane, you must be very pleased with your own performance today and your form at the moment.
Yeah, I'm going all right. I mean, at the end of the day, there's 15 of us there, and half the time I wouldn't get those scores down for the fellas walking around and passing the ball. Like, I mean, that's kind of what it's down to. You see Kilkenny there yesterday, and you couldn't pick any one of them. They all done it together and ground out a good result. Like, and that's kind of what it's down to, 15 fellas, not just one, you know.
That's Sarsfield's Kim McCarthy there after their win over in the Pearshig. You're going to hear from the Pearshig coach Sean Gaheen now speaking to Mark about their defeat today.
I'm very proud. I'll be honest, we came down today and I swear to God, I felt we were going to win. I really mean that. We were very confident coming down here. But again, you've got to take your chances this stage. You really have to take your chances. We create a lot of chances, particularly in the first half. We were on top, missed an easy goal chance, and wide, very easy wide after that. And they got up and got a fortress goal, I suppose. A flick could have gone anywhere, but we came back very well again. Came a pint in it, and we got a 65, and we put a wide, and we had the momentum with us that time. Really were on top. And then we just gave away a silly, silly freeze, you know. It's really stupid freeze we give away. And they punished every time. And that's what a good team like Stars would do to you, you know. You know, but you have to take the opportunities, and we didn't take the opportunity. We had nothing today, and we just didn't take them.
You didn't let the heads drop after the early goal?
No. We said, look, that was the most important thing today. We came down there today. No matter what happens, we don't panic. We keep plugging away. We keep soldiering on. Keep our work rate. And that was basically, we don't give up. And to be fair to the players, they're very proud of them. They're great characters. They've a lot of syllable about them over the last couple of years, you know. But they feel that's their 12th championship game this year. 6 football, 6 hurling. And they're just getting on with it. They're a great bunch of players.
And to bounce back from 2 defeats in the first and second round of the championship, to bounce back and run Sarah so close to the semi-final, it shows huge character on this team.
It's huge. We did get a bad start. But we turned it around. And I said, there's character on the team, and there's very, very good players, very talented players. With the exception of Sean Hogan, John Garner, today the average age was 22 starting today. You have Eddie Gunning, an 18-year-old fullback, Dean Lee and Eddie Gunning. I mean, to me, today he was like you think Darren Mannix was out there playing. He justifies age, and he's certainly a great future for us. Oh, great prospect.
And for the Pearshick, a bright future ahead.
For us, you know. I think we're on the right road. We learn. We know we're going to have to take a chance at this stage. You have to be clinical. A young team. And definitely going forward, we're in the right place, and we will return back, guarantee a stronger.
That's the Patricia coach Sean Gaheen there speaking after their defeat to Sarsfield's, booking their place in the senior hurling championship final with a 118-14 points win. They'll have to wait on the winners of Glen Rovers and Douglas. They'll have to go to a replay. They finished at 116 apiece in the second match in Porkycueve. We'll have reaction on that coming up very, very shortly indeed. I'm just going to talk a little golf. We'll be going live to Dennis Kerwin at Glen Eagles at about 6:45 later on in the show. But a fantastic performance from Team Europe as they defeated the USA 16.5 to 11.5, and all the credit's rightly going to one man, and that's Paul McGinley.
Well, it's a great sense of pride, as I say, this ugly face, how happy it is, and the pride that we give to everybody, and the happiness that people in the stands, and that's what you do. I'm giving it for everybody else, it's not for me.
He certainly deserves all the plaudits that are coming his way. It was an incredible performance from him as captain. All the players were particularly paying tribute to him afterwards. They were all impressed by his preparation. And Jose Maria Olazabal, one of his vice captains as well, as him paying tribute.
And everybody asked me that question when he was named captain of the Ryder Cup, and I knew he was going to do a wonderful job. He's a great man. He has the respect of the players. He has everything down to the smallest detail, and that's the way he was. He thought about everything, and he was spot on.
And here's Ian Poulter.
He was absolutely brilliant from start to finish, from the pictures on the walls, from how he spoke to how he treated everybody in that team room. Everyone was the same. I think he's done an absolutely sensational job.
And Rory McIlroy to round it all off.
I can't say enough about our captain. Paul McGinley has been absolutely immense this week. He has left no stone unturned. He's just been fantastic.
Incredible plaudits coming from players for Paul McGinley. We'll be discussing that with Dennis Kerwin live from Glen Eagles at about 6:45 this evening. Right, going to talk MMA. It was all about one man this weekend, even though he was the third fight from the top of UFC 178. It was all about Conor McGregor, and the hype train keeps on going. Biggie.
McGregor has borrowed our belt and he's got a microphone.
Get your facts right, John. I didn't borrow nothing. I stepped out of that cage. I met Jose in the lobby. He handed me the belt, kissed my feet, and said I apologize. And I carried on. Here I am with my newly acclaimed world title.
He's so loose. Yeah. Even in like a high-profile fight like this, look how relaxed he is in there.
These featherweights don't understand. Until they get hit by me, it's a whole other ballgame when they get hit by me.
Conversation. Look at the finish.
You know what's next? That world title is next. I'm going to fly to Brazil, and if they want, I'll eliminate Chad Mini Mendes and step in and give the fans what they want. Aldo versus McGregor. Or, you know, we could come back and do that football stadium, bring the Brazilians over. We'll whoop them on home soil or away soil. It's no problem.
That's the real deal, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake about it. Conor McGregor is for real.
He certainly is. What a performance from McGregor last night. A lot of people waiting for him to slip up and for the hype train to come crashing down against a very dangerous opponent in Dustin Poirier, the fifth ranked featherweight in the UFC. McGregor didn't disappoint. It was 106 seconds of a pure masterclass. His movement was incredible. His striking was on point. He rocked Poirier with a couple of left hooks before the final flurry. It was absolutely incredible and well worth getting up at 3:30 to watch.
McGregor's worry wasn't that Poirier had nothing to offer, because that's the argument some people are putting forward today.
I think, and we discussed this yesterday with Fergus Ryan, the MMA journalist that we had on the show yesterday, that Poirier was broken mentally before he stepped into that cage last night, and you could see it as well. Conor was the epitome of calm. There's a different Conor at weigh-ins than there is in fights. Conor at weigh-ins is pumped to the point of hysteria, but then by the time the fight comes, he is calm, he's in control. Poirier last night was pumped up stepping into that cage. He was too emotionally invested in the fight, which is what Conor wanted, and therefore he had a massive adrenaline dump by the time the fight started and wasn't at his best. So advantage Conor in the psychological stakes for sure. Striking, Conor said after the fight that he had torn ligaments in his thumb, which meant that he couldn't do any striking for the last 4 weeks, and he was just concentrating on kicks. He came out, threw a couple of spin kicks, nothing really landed, but then after that Conor started leaving his hands go. He got tagged a couple of times, make no mistake. I think Poirier knocked out one of his teeth with a punch. McGregor was a tooth short at the post-fight press conference. So McGregor caught him with a left hook, and then after that he caught him with a lovely left hook as well, which rocked him. There's a bit of controversy about the ending of the fight, in that people are saying that the punch that put Poirier down was illegal. It wasn't to the back of the head. It was to the side of the head. It was behind the ear, granted, but it wasn't to the back of the head. And those punches, if they hit you right in that point, just above the ear, they mess with your equilibrium. You end up, your legs just go, and that's what happened to Poirier last night. McGregor gave his analysis of that punch.
Look a little closer, because it was a left hook that clipped him above the ear, and to hit a guy above the ear and to the back, that as long as it doesn't go right back, if it's above the ear and here, if it's above the ear but behind the ear, that's a clean blow. I had a discussion with Herb Dean right before the contest happened, so it was a clean blow, but I would have liked him to connect with the chin. I would have liked him to connect cleaner, but there's so much soft, beautiful tissue there that if you crack that little soft area, there's no coming back from that. So look a little closer. It was a legal shot, and that was that.
Did you say that, Dana? What did you think of the? Because you had a better view than we did. We were on the other side of the cage.
Yeah, no, I it looked legal to me too.
Now let the boss man say it's legal, and it's legal.
Tell me, Rory, when we watched this today, we remarked at how much talking that he was doing to Poirier during the bout. Is that something that he's added to his fight strategy?
A little bit, yeah. It's it distracts the opponent. It kind of fires them up and it forces them to make a mistake because they're too hasty to go in and punish
the person.
Invite
them on, kind of.
Yeah, even before the fight started, they were being brought into the middle by the referee, Herb Dean, and Herb was like, giving them, you got your instructions, yada, 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 if you want to touch gloves. And Conor just stuck his hand out and waved Poirier onto him. You know what I mean? It was incredible. It proves that McGregor is legit. There are still doubters out there. There are quite a few idiots suggesting that the fight was rigged, which is genuinely baffling. you'd want to take a long, hard look at yourself if you thought that fight was rigged.
We are going to have to see a better contest the next time he gets into a ring, though, because that's too relatively...
This guy was ranked 5 in the world. This is a massive step up, like, you know what I mean? And McGregor made it look easy. You can talk all you want about giving this guy proper contests or harder contests.
No, I'm not saying he wasn't.
But ever since he's come into the UFC, people have said, oh, this guy is a massive step up from his previous opponent. This is where the train stops, and it hasn't stopped. They said about Poirier, this is where the hype train stops, and Poirier is legit, he's dangerous, he's nasty, yada, yada, yada. This guy was brilliant. He'd never been knocked out before. He's really, really tough.
Well, you said as much in your article during the week, actually, when you were previewing this, that, you know, every step up was said to be a step up, and it didn't prove to be.
Hmm.
So the point I'm making is I'm not saying that they didn't put forward a contest for him in Poirier, but I think the doubters are going to have to see him win a fight and win it, you know, fighting.
Convincingly. But to be honest, Conor's point of view, he wins these fights in the first round, he gets in there, he takes no damage, he's ready to fight in 2 months.
I suppose he warned us. He told us he was going to do it.
He did, he certainly did. As for what's next for McGregor, I think he'll get a title shot. I think if Aldo beats Mendes, then he'll get a title shot against Aldo. If Mendes beats Aldo, I think Aldo deserves an immediate rematch.
Stupid question alert, when's that?
That is at the end of October, I believe, 179. If Mendes beats Aldo, then Aldo has earned the right to get an immediate rematch. I would love to see Conor McGregor go up against Frankie Edgar. We just played Kick in the Door by Big E Smalls, which is Frankie Edgar's walkout tune. I would love to see him fight against Edgar. Edgar's stand-up would be a massive test for McGregor. It would be a hugely exciting fight. Edgar comes to brawl, it'd be a title contender eliminator. It'd be a very interesting fight, but I do think that if Aldo beats Mendes, then McGregor will get a title shot, because there is massive money to be made in McGregor from the UFC from a business point of view. It's not about rankings, where you're at, how many fights you've had, whether you deserve to be the number one contender or not. This is a business. UFC will make a ton of money. McGregor v Aldo would be gangbusters.
He knows how to sell the entire competition, or the contest, the whole lead up to it and everything. He knows all the right things to say to the media to drum off the interest. So yeah, definitely, I'd agree.
Yeah, cannot wait to see this dude fight again. As for the rest of the card, Cerrone looked very, very good. Katsingana looked very, very good, and absolutely delighted as well for Dominic Cruz. Almost 3 years on the shelf with a litany of injuries, came back, a dominant first round TKO for him. He's back in the title hunt, and I'm absolutely thrilled to see that guy fight a really, really exciting fighter. Alright, still to come on the show, we're going to look back in yesterday's All-Ireland, we're going to talk Munster, we're going to go back down to Páirc Cuíve for a reaction from that second semi-final, and we're going to be going live to Glen Eagles to discuss Europe's win at the Ryder Cup.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
with Chill Insurance, proud sponsors of Cork GAA for all your business insurance needs.
Alright, we're going to talk Gaelic games again, and Kilkenny are hitting home from Dublin this evening, celebrating All-Ireland hurling glory for the 35th time after beating rivals Tipperary in yesterday's final replay. Goals from Richie Power and John Power helped the Cats to a 217-214 victory at Croke Park. Lisa has been talking to Irish independent Gaelic games writer Colm Keyes about the decider, and first spoke about a contrasting style to yesterday's game.
Absolutely. I mean, the open, free-flowing, easy to get a score All-Ireland final 3 weeks ago, I think within 70 seconds, you could see there were completely different terms of engagement here. Two Kilkenny players executed great blocks, and you could just see the frantic, frenetic way that Kilkenny approach this game, that there would be no repeat of the 29 scores they conceded 3 weeks earlier, which was a record on Brian Cody's watch. I mean, no Cody team had ever conceded so many scores in a championship, so that was something they really, really addressed, and just completely different terms of engagement. And Brian Cody would probably feel that this was a real game of hurling in the way that so many blocks, hooks and successful tackles were made. I counted into double figures for blocks alone, Kilkenny players alone, and indeed Tipperary. So it was that type of game. It was tight, it was tense, and there was something so primal about it that that really made it a great spectacle too, in a different way than 3 weeks earlier.
Was there much different to Tipperary's approach to this game from the outset?
Well, Tipperary, their big players up front, it's not that they didn't play, they weren't let play, and I think Kilkenny's approach to the way they defended the matchups, they got every one of them absolutely spot on, and There was a bit of concern in Kilkenny over Kieran Joyce's selection at centre-back beforehand, but to all intents and purposes, he never really played there. He followed Patrick Maher wherever Bonner went and did a superb man-marking job. He's built low to the ground like Bonner. He was the perfect opponent for him, and he won his battle. Now, Bonner's probably his first touch wasn't good on the day. He just couldn't get ball in hand to drop that shoulder like he does and drive at the Kilkenny defence like he did so successfully the last day. But all the matchups they got right. Paul Murphy followed Lar Corbett everywhere. When Corbett drifted out, Paul Murphy went with him. JJ Delaney got so much tighter on Seamus Callanan, and Porrick Walsh outplayed Noel McGrath. So I would say that probably five out of the six confrontations between Tipperary attacker and Kilkenny defender were won by the Kilkenny player. Killian Buckley and Garrod Ryan evened itself out a little bit, but Buckley was able to come in and win so many puckets. So from that point of view, that's where Kilkenny won the game, between there and the work of their two midfielders, Conor Fogarty and Michael Fenley, who did so much brilliant defensive work, especially Conor Fogarty. I don't think people really realise how well he played.
Colm, few will second guess Anton Brighton Cody will do, but the three changes he made, as you mentioned, Kieran Joyce making such an impact, but Porrick Walsh as well, a huge contribution, and John Power up front to take on one of the crucial goals. You know, he's unbelievable that he makes these changes and they just work out so well for him.
Well, he is the master craftsman for picking a team. There is no doubt about that. When he takes out his scalpel and starts to pick away at a team, and invariably between a drawn game and a replay, Brian Cody historically gets it right, and we saw it 2 years ago with the introduction of Walsh.
Yeah.
And Killian Buckley for the Galway game, both came up trumps. Colin Fenley was dropped that day. Another three big calls, obviously not to play Henry Shefflin, surprised a few to put John Power in there, but for a rookie, John Power acquitted himself very well, got his goal, got a point, worked hard. But I think the success of Joyce and Porrick Walsh was just so instrumental to Kilkenny winning. I would think they are two of Kilkenny's top four players yesterday. And that's a testament to Cody once again getting it right. It's a big, big thing for him not to play Henry Shefflin. It's an even bigger thing for him not to use Tommy Walsh at any stage over the last four games. But ultimately, the result justifies everything, and that has always been Cody's way. He is detached from sentiment in that regard, and he read the situation from the drawn game perfectly, understood that someone like Kieran Joyce needs to track Bonner Maher and detailed him to do that, and you have to say he got it spot on.
And his counterpart then, will Eamon O'Shea wake up this morning and think, you know, was there a particular aspect of the game that you saw that Tipperary will be regretful of? Was there obvious changes you feel the management could have made?
Look, I'd only say it with the benefit of hindsight. He picked the same team, and that was fair enough. There might have been an issue over Michael Cahill, maybe not starting, and perhaps Michael Cahill could have been in that full back line. But he gave them a great option to come in to wherever the trouble spot we needed. Looking at it, you know, Shane McGrath had the capacity to score brilliant points every time. His first two points were just superb. And he had been drifting out of the game before he was taken off, and it was a bit of a surprise to me. I thought maybe put him up front, keep him on the field if he can score that. When he was in that groove, really and truly, I felt he should have been kept on. Lar Corbett was completely peripheral. By my count, he only had two meaningful touches of the ball, and he stayed on until the 64th minute. So that's probably an area that Tipperary will look at. But I don't think any of these issues really, it wasn't that. It was their inability to break free, their forwards to break free from their markers and get a consistent stream of ball that they got in the drawing game. And for that, you must give Kilkenny all the credit. This was a most comprehensive three-point victory for them. It could have been 10. It could easily have been 10. A lot of Tipperary's defenders played very well. You would have to say Porrick Maher. Brendan Maher, I thought, was outstanding. Kieran Bergen, very good until the first Kilkenny goal when Richie Power outfielded them. But generally, you would have to say, whatever changes Tipperary made, I don't think they were going to work on a day. This was just a game from the very outset that Kilkenny were going to win.
That's Irish independent Gaelic Games writer Colm Keyes there speaking to Lisa. An extended version of that interview is available on redfm.ie. Going to talk the Ryder Cup, and Dennis Curran in association with Halfpenny Golf, custom fit specialist nationwide, joins us on the line from Glen Eagles, now reporting on victory for Europe. And Dennis, this is all about one man really, and that's Paul McGinley. He won't like all the attention that's being heaped on him, but he deserves a massive amount of credit.
Yeah, he deserves every single bit of it, Rory. He's been absolutely immense this week, and in many ways he set a new blueprint for, you know, Ryder Cup captaincies of the future. A lot of people have said, you know, he basically just took the best parts out of the captaincies of the past and added a modern dimension to it. And he has received praise right across the entire spectrum, from the media, from his own players, from officials, from everybody really. Even Tom Watson was, you know, very happy for him, because he said he has been absolutely meticulous in his preparation, very thorough, and, you know, a great ambassador in general for European golf, and he can be very, very, very proud of himself. He holds a winning putt, as we all know, in the past, and now he's a winning Ryder Cup captain, so it's quite a legacy, and he, you know, I think he's got a shot at this in the future. I'm not so sure if it'll come up for a few years, but I definitely think he's going to be in the frame at some stage in the future, Rory. He thoroughly excelled as captain, and, you know, he got his just desserts today.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure the players would be too unhappy to see McGinley be captain again in the future. Talk to me about today, Dennis, heading into the day. I mean, like, it was just a matter of when Europe were going to secure the Ryder Cup, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't for a while, in the sense that, you know, the Americans got off to a really fast start, Rory, and certainly Ray McDowell was down three down to Jordan Spieth at the turn, and Dustin Rose was four down at one stage to Hunter Mahan, but they both managed to rescue their matches, and that, I think, was the turning point of the entire day. Ray McDowell, what can you say about him? I mean, this guy just has, you know, unbelievable guts. He went out there, he was three down, as I say, at the turn. He came around, he birdied four holes straight, and he ended up taking a 2-1 victory over Jordan Spieth. And that just sent a really positive message right down through the team. Henrik Stenson was beaten by Patrick Reed, who was one of the stars for the Americans. Of course, he was one of the young rookies on the team, but he was absolutely brilliant this week. Then, of course, Rory McIlroy. Well, Rory McIlroy demolished Ricky Fowler. He was five up after six holes on Ricky Fowler. He had five birdies and an eagle in those six holes. Just incredible golf from Rory McIlroy. He really, over the last couple of days, the first day his game wasn't quite there, but over the last couple of days, Rory, he just played the type of golf that we all know he can play. And 5-4 victory over Ricky Fowler today said it all. Justin Rose, as I say, brilliant comeback against Hunter Mahan to snatch a half. And then Stephen Gallagher, well, he's had a tough week. I mean, he's waited all his life to play in a Ryder Cup on his home soil, and he's had a really difficult experience. He was one up at one stage on Phil Mickelson, but he got beaten 3-1 in the end. Martin Kaymer had a great victory over Bubba Watson, 4-2. And then Thomas Bjorn, he again struggled a bit this week. He was beaten 4-3. But then Sergio Garcia came up with a one-hole victory over Jim Furyk. Ian Poulter got a half against Webb Simpson. And then it was down to Jamie Donaldson. And Jamie Donaldson, well, Jamie Donaldson joins an illustrious list of people Rory, to secure the winning point at a Ryder Cup. And it's, you know, what a shot he hit in. He hit a wedge from about 145 yards to about 18 inches to 2 feet to secure victory. It was quite a brilliant shot, conceded by Keegan Bradley, and the Cup was back in European hands for an eighth time in the last 10 renewals. So, you know, Europe certainly dominating. And, you know, it's a bit like the days when the USA were dominating this tournament so much. Everybody said, well, it needs to be shuffled around, needs to be a change. And we got that in the late 70s when GB and I became Team Europe. But now it's gone the other way. Now Europe are dominating, Rory.
Yeah, fantastic stuff indeed. We talked about McGinley's captaincy and all the virtues of that. Let's talk about Watson and what he got wrong. I mean, like, Phil Mickelson has been quoted this evening waxing lyrical about Paul Azinger and his captaincy, and he wants him to come back, and that can be construed as maybe that Watson wasn't the right man for the job.
Look, I just come out of a press conference where Tom Watson is there with his the 12 members of his team, and there's a somber mood in the room, and it's interesting that Phil Mickelson is sitting on the seat furthest away from Tom Watson on the left. There has obviously been issues between the pair over the last few days. He made the wrong decision in putting Phil Mickelson out twice on the first day. Phil Mickelson is 43 years of age. He suffers from arthritis. It was a cold day on Friday here at Glen Eagles, and I'm sure he was absolutely shattered at the end of it. He then sat him out for the Saturday morning four-ball session, and Mickelson said he wanted to play in the alternate shot foursomes in the afternoon, and he lobbied Tom Watson quite, you know, he lobbied him quite a bit. He spoke to him, he pleaded with him to play him. Watson said, no, I've decided that, you know, I'm going to go with other options. And he then, interestingly, said, I actually texted Tom Watson then once again to make a final play. Now, it was interesting that he even revealed that. And in revealing that, I think it was a direct criticism of Watson himself. He made a couple of other errors along the way, but that was probably the most notable one. You know, I think his team, his sheet selection for the singles was spot on. He got that absolutely right. He put his three young guys out first, Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed and Ricky Fowler. I mean, at one stage, it looked like Spieth, Reed and Mahan were going to win three of the top four matches. So that looked like a good decision for a while, but they turned it around. So overall, Tom Watson, 65 years of age, the Ryder Cup has become a sporting absolute monster. And I think it needs a man who's young, who's got vitality. I mean, Paul McGinley's 47, 48 years of age. He's probably about the right age for it, you know, because he's still in touch with the players, Rory, as well. And that's important. There is a bit of a disconnect there between some of the younger players and Tom Watson. I mean, the likes of Jordan Spieth doesn't even remember when Tom Watson was in his heyday. His first memory of Tom Watson was in 2009 in Turnberry when he had the chance to win the Open. So, look, I think Paul Azinger's captaincy stood out for many of the players, and it stood out because they actually won the Ryder Cup at Valhalla, and it's one of the rare occasions that they've actually won it. But just because you go and win it doesn't mean you're going to win it again. But I think probably you're right. Probably Phil Mickelson's criticism of, or his endorsement of Paul Azinger to come back as Ryder Cup captain was an indirect dig at his own captain on this occasion.
And finally, Dennis, next European captain, Darren Clarke?
That's going to be an interesting one. There was obviously an interesting battle between Darren Clarke and obviously Paul McGinley for this one. It was one that McGinley won. It's highly political. There's a lot of moving and shaking has to be done to get the position because it's quite a coveted role. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's quite a few quid attached to it. I mean, you can make a lot of money. I've no doubt that Paul McGinley's going to go on and have a career in motivational speaking and, you know, basically he'll become a management consultant or something like that in terms of trying to drive teams on, that type of thing. So it can be quite lucrative. I think it's probably going to, the next captaincy is probably a straight fight perhaps between Thomas Bjorn and Darren Clarke. Not sure how that's going to pan out. Obviously, Padraig Harrington might also be in contention now that he's been vice-captain here. But there's a lot of players lining up. I mean, you've got, you know, Miguel Angel Jimenez is also in the frame. So you have four or five players now that have put themselves in the frame to be captain. And it could be a straight knockdown, drag-out fight as to who gets it next time round. But my own personal view is that Darren Clarke is probably not the favourite for it at this stage.
Excellent. Dennis, as always, thank you very much.
Cheers, Rory.
That's Dennis Crowan there in association with Halfpenny Golf, custom fit specialist nationwide, joining us live on the line from Gleneagles. It's going to talk local Gaelic games and back. We go to Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Glen Rovers and Douglas will have to do it all over again today after they finish level in the second semi-final, 1-16 apiece. The Sarsfields waiting in the final. Going to hear from both sides. First, going to hear from Glen Rovers boss Des Cullinan.
I suppose in the call later day, the draw was a fair result, but it was a game we should have won, but we could have lost it. In fairness, like Douglas showed, great commitment from, I think it's about 45 minutes on. You know, they really thundered into the game and we were lucky to kind of get an equaliser, but we were delighted with the commitment that our guys showed as well. So we're happy to be there, and look, it's great to be in another semi-final next week, you know. We've waited about maybe 5 or 6 years to be in a semi-final, now we're in two, so, you know, we have to be positive and drive on.
And a good first half, you led it by 4 points at half time. You got the early goal after 3 minutes.
Yeah, a good first 45 minutes. I think I looked up at the clock at 45 minutes, I think we were 5 or 6 points up and going well. But I think at that stage we kind of said, you know, this game is there to be won. And then we kind of just kind of dropped a small bit and left them back into the game. And, you know, they got a tremendous goal. I mean, but he must have ran about 80 yards for the goal. And that's something that we need to learn. But we've a very young team, and like guys, hopefully we'll learn from that, and we'll learn from that, you know. So, you know, just take it forward again now, and it's positive for the next day.
And Douglas had that run of 1-4 without reply, turned the game totally in his head.
Absolutely, got tremendous scores, and you have to give him great credit. I thought it was a fantastic game, there was great intensity, and Douglas obviously knew that if they didn't perform, they were out of the championship, and they showed great character and courage to come back into the game, and, you know, nothing that you wouldn't expect in a county semi-final. But we're glad that our fellas, like, reacted. I mean, we would have been absolutely gutted if we'd lost that game by a point, but we didn't, and we're there to fight again, you know.
And to fight back again when Douglas went into the lead and your lads came back again.
And that's been our way
all year. We've asked them to give that commitment, you know, never to give up. And in fairness, they couldn't. They didn't, and we couldn't ask any more of them, you know.
Is there anything particularly pleasing about the performance today? Is there anything you have to work on ahead of the replay?
Oh, yeah, I still think we didn't play to our full potential. I think there's fellas that can give a lot more. You know, we had a few guys that were sick and injured there during the week, so, you know, hopefully they'll be better, that much better again next week, and we'll see. But look, it's going to be a huge battle again the next day. Replays never tend to stay, take the same way, you know. But you don't know, you know. Hopefully, I was going to say the team of yellow in their jersey might win, like, but you just don't know. And I think Kenny showed that it can be done. So hopefully we'll win the next day, but I wouldn't underestimate the challenge, you know.
And does either team have an advantage now ahead of the replay?
I don't know. We both try to convince ourselves that we have, but I don't think we have, you know. I mean, you still have to go out and do it. I don't think anybody sustained any serious injuries or anything like that. So, I mean, the extra week will just mean two good teams will go at it again, hammer and tongs next week, you know. But it's hard to predict replays. You don't know what way it'll go, you know. But we'll be hoping that our team will be right, and, you know, we'll do all we can to prepare them during the week, and we'll see them down here again next Sunday.
That's the Glens, that's Colin Ann there, speaking after their draw with Douglas. Going to hear from Douglas's call, Collins.
We're delighted with us. We were 6 points down there with 15 minutes to go. And fairness to the lads, they've done it all year. They've gone down in the two big games, the Higgins, Middleton and against Sales, and they came back here again today. We're half time in a match. That's it.
And with some spirit to fight
great
back.
Spirit, great spirit. There's great group of players there. And as I said all the time, the older lads there are keeping it going. And again today, they stood up there again today and they kept the young fellas going around them, and our subs that came in were outstanding. Every one of them. So we have a good panel of players there, and they're all willing to work for each other.
You can see the early goal after 3 minutes. You were in at the break, 4 points down. What was the feeling like at that stage?
No, we always knew, like, we knew we weren't going to go away. Like, we knew that we were going to come back into this game. Like, but when we went to 6 points down, like, a lot of people up in the stand would have said, that's it, Douglas are gone again, but this game isn't going to go away. It's going to take a very good team to beat Douglas.
And to go on a run of 1-4 out reply.
Yeah, that's the character in this team. And that's what's built into them. And the players know themselves now, just they're up for it, and they're not going to go away easily. So, as I said, it's half time in the match.
And does any team have the advantage now ahead of the replay?
No. Two good teams there, a good game holding there, a great second half there. It's obviously always going to be a great game when you have a comeback like that, like, you know. I suppose the Glen will be disappointed. There were 6 points up and we came back at them. But we were always going to have, like, in any game you're playing, you're always going to have your time in the game, and we had our time as well, like, and that's it. We had a lot of white still, like, it's the thing we need to correct. But as I said, we're half time in the match.
That's Cathal Collins there of Douglas speaking after their draw today with Glen Rovers in the Senior Hurling Championship semi-final. Before we hand you over to Ashley Keating for Green on Red, going to talk briefly about rugby and Munster beating 19-14 by the Ospreys at Thomond Park last night in the Pro 12. It means they dropped to 6th in the table, 2 wins and 2 defeats in the opening 4 games. Murray Kinsley is rugby writer for thescore.ie and spoke with Lisa about the defeat and began by giving his assessment of the Munster performance.
Yeah, I suppose the first thing to say is that it was quite a close game, and you know, they're fine margins at this level. Anthony Foley spoke about it afterwards. A couple of kicks maybe had gone over from Keithley's boot and they would actually won this game. But having said that, it was certainly a disappointing night. They were well beaten at the breakdown. They missed chances in the Ospreys 22 when they had chances to score. They just weren't clinical enough, even though they had looked like being clinical in the first kind of 10 or 15 minutes when they scored through Van den Heever. So there are a lot of things to work on for Munster this week, especially building into the Leinster game.
Are they big issues, small issues? Because Conor Murray spoke after the game about how they weren't far from clicking. You know, are we too quick to press the panic button? Are these small issues or big issues?
Yeah, Conor Murray actually spoke really well after the game. He was particularly honest, and he said it's not good enough really for Munster to be losing twice at home at the start of the season in Thomond Park, which has kind of had that fortress status in recent years. And he said there's certainly issues that can be fixed, but he said they need to be fixed quickly. I certainly think they can improve. I mean, you look at their lack of kind of finishing opportunities in the Ospreys 22, and it was down to little things like guys coming in the side of a ruck, someone just missing their detail in that kind of area. So they're things that certainly can improve. Whether they can do it quickly enough to win away to Leinster is the big question for them. Anthony Foley is also very disappointed with how they played a lot of rugby inside their own half. He kind of wants them to kick out a little bit more, I think, and take kind of less risks in where they're playing with possession. So, yeah, there are definitely things that you can improve. The players know how to do these things. They're professional players for a reason. So you would hope that they'll improve for next weekend.
These are the sort of things that you expect to see in a season opener, but the whole season opening aura about this Munster team seems to be carrying on into now the fourth game.
Yeah, there is certainly a little bit of a negative vibe around it at the moment. They kind of need that big fixture. You were hoping it was going to be last night at Tone Park. They need that big fixture, that big performance to kind of kickstart things. They obviously had two wins over Italian opposition, but I mean, when you lose at home to the Ospreys the week after that happening, you kind of look back and see things. Maybe those fixtures weren't as impressive as they looked with a five try winning margin in one of them. So yeah, it's a little bit worrying that it's kind of lasting. We asked Anthony Foley if he last night after the game if he thought that Munster could be a little bit further on compared to where they are now, and he obviously had hope that they would be. He spoke about 3 weeks' time, the Rugby Champions Cup kicking off, which maybe is a little bit worrying that he's kind of focused on that kind of milestone in the season, whereas, you know, they've had these Pro 12 games that they need to be winning. It's not just a case of building up for the Champions Cup, so that kind of maybe was a little bit worrying, but I think Leinster will bring out the best in them next again.
They tend to. You know, it's this big fixture where it's, you know, the script is perfect for it. You know, Munster haven't performed well. They've lost at home, losing at Thomond Park twice. Then going to Leinster, it's written in the stars, really. It's the sort of game that they'll always, you know, rise to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been one of the issues. It certainly stood last night in that Munster, I'm searching for a better word than urgency, but they lack maybe just a bit of aggression in some of their kind of clearing out of their carries. We saw kind of midway through the second half, Paul O'Connell made two big massive hits, and you kind of hoped that would be a momentum shifter and other guys would kind of follow in behind that, but it just didn't seem to happen. And Conor Murray said that afterwards, you know, we need to be able to get up for these kind of games, which is slightly worrying. You know, they need that aggression. That should be a kind of given underneath all the tactics and whatever the game plan is. But as you said, I don't think that's going to be an issue at all against Leinster. I think everyone in the Munster squad is going to bring those aggression levels and bring that intensity, that urgency. So it'll certainly be improved, and hopefully then with that, the game plan will kind of flourish a little bit more.
That's Murray Kinsler there of thescore.ie speaking about another defeat from Munster last night, beaten by the Ospreys 19-14, and that Leinster game to come. Tough start for Axel Foley as Munster boss, but he knew it was going to be a tough job when he took it on. Fingers crossed, get the win against Leinster next weekend. That's pretty much it from us. It's been a cracking day, Sportlies, isn't it?
A cracking weekend. I've absolutely loved it. Sometimes I think I give out yesterday. I was like, Rory, there's too much on. I can't focus on everything.
There's no such thing as too much sport. Just not enough TVs. There's never such thing as too much sport.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. Not enough TVs. Despite what would be 5-6 screens on the go at one stage yesterday. Yeah, it's been a brilliant weekend, and it's been topped off by that Cork football win today. For me, just absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely incredible stuff. The homecoming will be tomorrow night on the St. Mal after 8 o'clock. We'll have details on Cork's Red FM across the day tomorrow when we get them. We want a massive turnout for the Rebels to welcome them and the Brendan Martin Cup home for the 9th time in 10 years. Never mind your Kilkenny, this is the best GAA team in history. Absolutely incredible stuff. That is it from myself and Lisa. Thank you very much for tuning our way this evening on the Big Red Bench. Ashley's up next with Green on Red. Our podcast will be available on redfm.ie/sport. Until next Saturday at 6, enjoy your evening.
The Big Red Bench, Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
with Chill Insurance, proud sponsors of Cork GAA for all your home insurance needs.